Hello and welcome to the Bravo Outsider Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Midwinter, joined once again by Sandy Kloak. And we're very excited to be joined by returning guest from our third episode, I think. He actually coined our sign-off, Keep On Wifing. So super excited to have Ryan Ash returning.
I ate an entire car piece by piece right in front of God.
Wow, that gets a 10.
That has to be, yeah, that has to be the most unique tagline that we've had someone give.
Oh my gosh, I came in hot because I was so stoked to hear I had something to do with the sign-off. Oh my gosh, what a high honor.
What was your inspiration for that?
I believe his name is like Tony Loltito or something. The guy who ate a plane piece by piece, he's ate like shopping carts and stuff. I was like, for some reason, I was like, say something about eating a car. And then right during the intro, I was looking at him and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to shout out Tony Loltito, but then I did because you asked.
Yeah. So I have read that guy's Wikipedia article as well. And it's like something that has definitely resonated with me. And I don't know what the context was, but for whatever reason, I brought it up in front of my like 4-year-old. I think he was like 3 at the time when I mentioned that there was a guy that ate a plane and he was just like the gears turning in his head. And he was like obsessed over the fact that someone ate a plane for weeks. And my wife, Jessica, was like, look at what you've done. Tony.
No, as soon as he said that, I'm like, as a kid, that would have set me off too. I would be like, we need to safeguard ourselves to make sure when this man comes around that he doesn't eat us. Like someone this unpredictable, like I don't understand what he's up to, but I don't think anyone else does either. He's a wild card, Dad.
Yeah, he ate like a Cessna plane, like over the course of, I don't know, it was like 15 years or something like that, a little bit each day.
Yeah.
And it didn't kill him. Something, well, I guess it was kind of unclear what killed him, but it's not directly attributed to the plane, at least.
Yeah.
Amazing. Really glad to have you back. And actually, you're the first guest that we've had back to talk about a second season of the same show. Like when you were first on, I think we covered, it was maybe even the finale of the last episode of Miami. And so you watched 2 episodes this week. One was Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. The other was Real Housewives of Miami. What was it like revisiting Miami?
Miami, you know what? And because I did watch them in that order, I did Salt Lake City and Miami. And I would say, like, you know, without completely burying the lead for, what I would say is like Salt Lake City kind of like was a bit, it was a bit more conversational. Whereas like you go back to Miami and things are happening in Miami. Miami's fun. Yeah. So it was good to revisit and definitely, because there's so many Real Housewives and I'm not a fluent watcher or whatever. Like, when I jump back into Miami, I'm like, yeah, I think I've seen my, and then as soon as I saw Marisol, I'm like, yeah, I've seen Miami before. This is okay. I got it. Yeah.
We're going to try something a little bit different structurally today. We're going to start with a segment called Housewives in a Hurry, and I'm going to put 20 seconds on the clock, and I want you to explain to us as though we know nothing about Housewives what happened in this episode. Like, tell us as much as you can about who the players are, what the story is, and your time starts now.
Okay. So first of all, we're doing Salt Lake City. Okay. So, so Salt Lake City starts. They're talking about a fight. They're talking about talking. They're mad about the fight. Lisa has to make up with somebody. And then, because the fight was about, they were dressed as pioneers and they're yelling at each other as pioneers.
You got it.
Brutal. Okay. Yeah. that's roughly what happened in Salt Lake City. Okay.
That's
so, we will start with Salt Lake City first. What were your impressions of these housewives? Because they were brand new to you.
I guess. I wasn't as clear immediately. Like I was like when I was looking like at the housewives or whatever, I was kind of like I wasn't exactly clear on like who did what. I guess it was just the family in the episode. It wasn't really clear. I didn't meet many people's families in those episodes compared to previous Real Housewives I've watched. So I guess that was one thing, was they kind of remained ambiguous to me throughout the course of the episode. Whereas I thought the shows that I had seen, it did a pretty good job on catching me up, or like I got people's essence. I didn't really get as much of an essence from like the Salt Lake City people. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't a total vibe that I could follow with any of them in that particular episode to like pin down who they were, or, you know, who they want us, you know, right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I definitely get where you're coming from. I think like, you had a tough assignment with this episode of Salt Lake City because you're really dropped right into the middle of things. But at the same time, we're in between some like major happenings. So this is like a little bit of a peacetime episode. Let's talk about your highlights. So I asked you to select one or two highlights from this episode. What stood out to you? What were your highlights?
Well, first of all, I really liked the two things. Yeah, I guess I'll say that it was interesting to see a Mormon missionary store.
Yeah.
You know, like that they have a photo. Because I didn't quite catch it in as they were coming into the store. You know, you see the suits on display and whatnot. I forget the exact word. It was a very official religious word, like kind of denoting like a movement or something, like prostrate or something, I believe, or so the sales attendant said, "You're going to be doing this in this suit." So, and I was like, right. Oh, before they kind of actually revealed that that's what the whole store was. I was like, okay, that's what you kind of. So it was interesting because I was wondering how much of the religion bleeds its way into the Salt Lake City show.
Yeah, this is a store that I feel like could only exist within Salt Lake City or Utah somewhere. This idea of a high fashion store for missionaries. This scene as a whole was fantastic. Like I thought that it kind of embodied a lot of just the setting really well, but also the themes that were going on this season in Salt Lake City. Like we are getting this scene between Lisa and her son that like it's got an element of tenderness there for sure, but also like it's a very like complicated dynamic that Lisa has with kind of the church in the cultural sense, and like she doesn't really adhere to a lot of the more strict rules of the Mormon church, and so to have her go to this store where like she's someone that like really appreciates fashion and is going into this store where like it is fashion, but it is like within kind of a box, whereas she's used to like expressing herself through fashion. I thought that that was really interesting. And we got a look at that dynamic of her as a mother and this like push and pull with her son and how like complicated that relationship is because he adheres so much more strictly to the church than she does. Another thing that I thought was really like compelling about this scene to me was just how Lisa reacted to Jack kind of pushing her back a bit. Like she, as soon as he was like, you know, I need my space. You need to back off. Like, I think he literally says, you need to back off. You're a lot. She doesn't do that. She does the opposite. And she really like pours on the guilt and, you know, telling this childhood story of how he used to say, my heart beats to mom, to mom, to mom. It's like, oh, you are really like pulling out the deep cuts in order to like manipulate him into, you know, feeling guilty and feeling sentimental because that's what you're feeling and that's what this moment means to you. It's a moment about sentimentality, whereas for him this moment is the opposite. This is him like trying to spread his wings and get freedom. So I thought that dynamic between these characters is just like so fascinating. This scene was a definite highlight for me. Did you have one more highlight from this episode?
Yeah, the whole Plated by Meredith thing. I don't know. I think it's fascinating to see what people do and, you know, outside of the confines of, you know, the show, right?
Yeah. Okay, first off, like, Plated by Meredith seems like the worst name for a jewelry line. Like, she might as well have just called it cheap, right? Yeah. Like, like, this isn't real. This is just, like, but that gold that, colored.
That was some marketing people being like, we're taking it back. You know what I mean? Like, it's like Next is like pleather. You know it. We know it. Wear it.
What specifically about this scene stood out to you?
You know what? I was fascinated. I honestly wish they showed a bit more of the collection, just because, and honestly, but maybe they did in episodes previous, like how much is she designing, you know, like, is she kind of overseeing design with just idea input? Like, I'm curious now about, like, you know, how deep it goes with Meredith's involvement in the creative process for the jewelry line. Yeah, I don't know. And what I guess it is just obviously was kind of the climax. So you have the thing with Whitney and then Lisa then becoming the new in terms of the fight. You know, yeah. One fight dies and another fight rises like the phoenix. Yeah. And obviously, like, you know, yeah. And then you see the preview for the next episode. And then now Lisa's going to be like, you attacked me, to Whitney or whatever, after Whitney went after her. Yeah. So, you know, the machine keeps moving, man. They keep fighting.
Sandy, what did you think about this scene? Because this was one that stood out to me. I'm curious what your take on this party was.
It was absolutely one of my highlights. I thought it was so fascinating watching Lisa. I mean, I love Lisa and Whitney's interaction. So Whitney comes to this party with her close or best friend just dying. And if this were the normal world, I would say, you know, don't do that if you can't make this someone else's party all about you. But of course we're here for this. So I think it was a great choice. So she did proceed to make it all about her, which is, you know, fine. She did have her friend die. I am trying to figure out what was happening with Lisa, because I think Lisa just like forgot that Whitney's friend died, even if she remembered that morning. And I'm interested in you guys' take on this, because she really was acting like she didn't recall that, even though she apparently sent flowers that morning. It can skip someone's mind, especially someone that's very self-involved like Lisa. I think that's plausible. I'm interested to hear what you guys think. And then I think she felt really upset when she was called out on it, because all of a sudden you kind of see a shift where she's like, well, that, yes, I just, oh yes, of course, that's how you feel. And I just didn't know if I should bring it up or not. Like, I don't know. That wasn't the vibe a second ago. And then she gets so, so upset by being called out on this. And I think that's because she feels genuinely really bad and it's really cutting her, because like she really does want to be a good friend, but she's just struggling with like an incredibly self-involved personality all the time. So that's my read on it, but I don't know if that's right. And I'm interested, because I found it so interesting how upset she got, because she could have just been like, oh, whatever, like you're overreacting. She was crying at some point, I think, after being called self-involved. And I think sometimes when you know something's true about yourself, it is harsher to hear. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that she went into this like in battle mode. And I think that you're right that she completely forgot. Like, I think that she was, you know, in housewife mode beforehand. She's like, okay, so I've got this, like, I'm going to have to deal with Monica when she's there, and like things are going to blow up, because the last time we saw them together, it was explosive. We know that that is just such a heated, intense situation. I think that was like number one thing on her mind. I think the other thing is, you know, she is clearly affected by Jack like leaving, and she still has this dynamic with Heather that is a little bit unsteady. So that is another piece that is like, she's like, how am I going to deal with that? And also the last time that we saw Lisa and Meredith together, it is tense. Like at the beginning of this episode, when we get like a talk with them. They have like lunch or whatever. It's like they fight over how Lisa is like pumping the brakes on her relationship with Meredith, but not on her relationship with Angie. So I think she, you know, was seeing the battlefield. She was seeing all these like fronts that she might have to wage war on. And she was not thinking at all about Whitney. And then the fact that Whitney was like, hey, you're not being a good friend to me, which is like the core of the issue between Meredith and Lisa. I feel like she took all that energy, all that frustration that she had with Meredith about being called not a good friend, and projected that on to Whitney, and is like, you're not going to make me the villain here because I'm a good friend. I sent you flowers. She just completely like forgot at the beginning of this. And, you know, she doesn't want this to be kind of like another nail in her coffin, because like, I feel like she must know that she's not having the greatest season, since she's got so many like fights going on that she's having to juggle. Like, if you're in a position where you're going into a party, you got four people that you're worried about interactions with, like, you have to know that you're not having a great season socially. And so the fact that, you know, Whitney is someone who she has had a good relationship, and she does feel like off camera she has been a good friend, to have it brought up on camera, and like for her to be caught completely off guard, especially after forgetting, I think that she was like projecting a lot, and definitely like a misplay, but I'm totally here for it.
Yeah, no, totally. Defenses were up because, yeah, just in, as you say, full, she's at a 10 in housewife mode coming into that. And then I think she just, like, Whitney was probably ready to go to a 10 or whatever, because, and then Lisa was saying all the wrong things in terms of being, you know, especially, you know, starting off with the whole, like, I'm not good with death thing. Like, you know, just no one wants to hear it ever. You know, no one wants to hear about how you can't handle what they're doing in that situation, because they didn't put themselves in that situation. They're grieving.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
So whenever somebody launches into that, you know, I think in my head previously in life, my first instinct is like, oh, good for you. I don't care about your story right now. You know what I mean? Like, and your inability to deal with me being sad, like, get out of here. Shut up. You know, don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Totally. Sandy, what highlights did you have from this episode? Anything we didn't cover so far?
So other than that, what we just discussed, my other highlight was just a little one, which was I loved Monica's do-over trip gifts, because these trip gifts on these shows are always so absurd. They're always like, I mean, they're fun. Like, it's fun, but they're like useless gifts. It's this whole trope, this whole thing that always happens. They already did it with the little thing of sand, like last episode where Monica had a little childish freak out and said, I'm not going on this trip and whatever else. So she's doing like this do-over where she gets them these like massive pastries and like a bottle of rum. And I just think it was pretty funny because it was super awkward. She just like, literally, I can't remember what scene it was, but she interrupted a conversation where I really wanted to hear what was happening. I don't remember who was talking, but she's like, hi, can I just interrupt this? I have to go do something for 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, I really wanted to hear what was happening there, but okay. She brings them to a table to give them these giant pastry boxes and rum, which I'm sure none of them want either of those things. And I just thought it was pretty cute and stupid that she redid her gift thing. And then I love that like random people were trying to eat the pastries and she's like, oh, those are actually Special Housewives gift travel intro pastries. You can actually have these because one person didn't come. Like, none of those housewives are eating those pastries today or taking home that whatever she got them rum thing. So I thought that was all quite adorably stupid.
Yeah, those are producer pastries for sure. Like some... production assistant sought out the Bermudan pastry or the Portuguese pastries.
Monica had a really good like party scene. I thought that she did a great job with this like makeup, like bringing the makeup gift. She needed to do that. She also did a great job resolving things with Lisa, which was something that Lisa clearly didn't see coming. And also, I didn't see coming. Like, I thought that that was going to be, you know, some a relationship that was going to be fraught for the rest of the season. And I, yeah, even Lisa said, like, you're great at apologizing. This is great. And then afterwards, they like make up, and then Lisa's like, we're fine. We're fine, right? And Monica's like, yeah, I feel good. And Lisa being like, okay, I always need to double check, because clearly she is not handling the makeups in the relationships that she does have so far very well, since things with Meredith, who she just made up with at the beginning of the season, are already not great. And who knows where things are at with Heather, who she has... I feel like she's made up with Heather a few times and it just has not really stuck. So I really love the kind of self-awareness of her being like, we're good, right? Like, I don't need to worry about this. I always need to double check.
Can she take one person off her massive list that you enumerated earlier of people she has to be afraid to interact with? I'm sure she was happy.
Totally. Sandy, did you have any other highlights from this episode?
No, those were my top couple.
Cool. Yeah, I think we covered most of what I wanted to talk about from this episode. There was one like thing that I noticed that was really bizarre, was we got the scene between Heather and Monica at the like the bar. I don't know what this place was, but if you look in the background, every single person in there is like sitting on a laptop working, and Heather and Monica are ordering like Moscow mules and stuff like that. But it looks like the lobby of a very like business traveler centric hotel, like kind of like a nicer hotel, but near the airport. Like that's right. the vibe there. Just really surreal. But this conversation that they had where they like, you know, Heather's trying to like test the waters a little bit of like where Monica is at in terms of this upcoming trip to Bermuda, I thought was interesting, because it wasn't so much like, are you coming to Bermuda or not, but like, how do I proceed with you in this group? I need to figure that out like one-on-one, because she says like, I was trying the tough love approach or whatever. Clearly that didn't work. And I don't think it's fair to say that that wouldn't really work with Monica, because like she does revert to this, like any interaction that she has with her castmates, she reverts to like a childlike position. This is something that we've talked about often covering this season. She like reverts to being a child just because of the like relationship that she has with her mother, and she treats a lot of these like her castmates as kind of like maternal figures and how she deals with them. So I don't think that Heather was necessarily wrong for taking kind of that tough love approach, but I think that within the, you know, the context of everyone being upset with Monica and like her feeling really ganged up on, she needed someone in her corner. That's kind of like, that's what she has been, the subtext of what she has been yelling all season has been like, I want someone to stand up for me. I want like a mother figure to like be on my side, not like apologizing me, not scolding me. I want someone to like take my side, and she didn't get that. And so I think that that's where Heather went wrong in this situation. But yeah, so I know that there's a lot of stuff kind of in the meta on social media about like what is going on between Heather and Monica. We won't weigh into that until it comes up on screen, but really curious to see how this develops on screen. The other highlight for me, not really a highlight, but just something that like stood out to me, was the fact that Mary invited Monica over for like cake and to see her house and to like check in on her or something like that. Not really sure what Mary is doing here, just within the context of the show, because they don't have a pre-existing relationship. The person that Monica seems like she might be closest with is Whitney, who Mary is not great with. So maybe there's like trying to maybe turn Monica's perspective on Whitney a little bit, but that didn't come up. So I'm really confused as to what Mary is doing here. It almost feels like she is like going one by one with each of the castmates, bringing them over to her house for like a one-on-one discussion this season. Cause we saw that, like, I think Meredith came over for a one-on-one, Heather came over for a one-on-one. Now Monica is coming over for a one-on-one. Is she like, it's like the opening scene of The Godfather is what it kind of reminded me, like come into my space and, you know, like really have this, like take a groveling tone with me and like, you know, butter me up to like, if you want to get something out of me,
have some fluffy carrot cake.
So much cake on the show that they never eat, okay, but Mary, like, what is she even doing? She's only filming in her house. Like, that's the only place she's willing to film. This is a total repeat of several seasons ago where she eventually quit the show. She seems to refuse to film with the rest of the cast. And I like Mary. She's weird, but like, she needs to interact a bit. I don't want to only see her in her weird house. Like, it's cool once or twice, but she needs to go out and do something. Like, why is she even on the show? Like, this can't last that much. She's not going to be brought back, right? Like,
so I feel like when they went in to do this season, they were like, you're coming back as a housewife. So like full-time housewife, we're going to shoot stuff in your house or whatever. You're going to like be in the driver's seat on your story and how we're going to film and have some control. And then they realized she was doing the like same thing and demoted her to friend of. I feel like I've said that I think friend of is the perfect mix for Mary, but you're right. We need to see her out and about. We need to see like when we get her out at a party or interacting in a group setting, it is very like rewarding. There's so many great moments come out of that because she's forced to interact with people that she cannot hide her like contempt for. So like that's the Mary that I love to see. I feel like they were going to treat her as, you know, a housewife. And so they were filming at her house and she got to bring people over and they're like, okay, now like these are significant interactions for the sake of the overall story. We need to include these pieces. But I feel like if she returns next season, they might have a better idea as to how to handle her in a friend of capacity as opposed to like pursuing it as just the return of Mary as like a snowflake holder.
Yeah, totally. That's very helpful. Thanks, Craig.
That's not,
it's good. I know it's not the not insider fact. Bravo, but I take it like that. I think it's a really good guess.
Yeah. The way it stands right now, as you describe it, it kind of reminds me of like fantasy novels or shows where it's like a wizard has to travel to talk to another wizard of great import, but goes to that wizard's tower in a faraway land and then just walks back. And that's the whole thing. Like literally sometimes they just go somewhere to talk to a very learned guy and then they come back and maybe Mary is that wizard in this particular trope.
And her house didn't look as weird. Did she get rid of her weird chairs or was that a different room? Because she had some real wizard chairs being shown off the last few episodes, or Willy Wonka or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, maybe it's another thing, like production's just getting used to having like to set up at Mary's house. They know what needs to be rearranged in order to make it like seem like a sane place. It's gonna be one of those like things, you know how on like a police procedural show like Law and Order, how they have kind of these fixed like setups that you always see, like everything is always lit the same way. Or a soap opera is another example of this, where they like light things all a certain way and they have a very like simple setup that's repeatable and you always have the same like look. I feel like Mary's place is going to evolve into like a set like like that, where they just know their setups. It's like set it up quickly and then tear it down quickly. So I want to give each of the housewives and to an extent the friends of a rating out of 10. We're going to work our way through them. Okay, Ryan, let's start with you. What's your rating out of 10 for Heather this episode?
Five.
Five?
Yeah, five.
Okay. Five. Sandy, how about you?
Honestly, thinking back, I don't recall. She doesn't stand out for me, so I'll give her a six.
A six. Okay, you're being generous today, you guys. I'm going to give her a three because, like you said, we didn't really see much of her. I guess we got like a little bit of an interaction between her and Monica, but not really doing anything through no fault of her own, but still. Next is Lisa. I'm going to give Lisa an eight. I really enjoyed what we got out of Lisa. I feel like this was very heavy on the Lisa because we got that really great scene between her and her son. We got, you know, a really complicated dynamic between her and basically everyone at this party. So that's an eight for me. How about you, Sandy?
Yeah, totally echoing that. I'm going to give her a 10. I love Lisa and she gave us a lot this episode.
10. Nice. Mm-hmm. Ryan, how about you?
It's up there. I'm going to give a nine, a nine. I'm going to take away 1 point just because her son didn't choose anything cool in the suit shop.
I should have tore off the sleeves or something like that. Yeah.
Or if you want me, if I could rate him independently, that little dork gets a two. Go have fun in Bogota.
I like her son Jack. I think, like, I don't know, he's just been someone that we have seen a lot of different, like, we've seen him grow up and kind of like just be this awkward force, and I don't know, I really enjoy that it is like he's such a contrast between her, between Lisa and him. So yeah. I like him. Sandy, what would you give Monica out of 10?
I'm going to give Monica an 8 for this episode, or maybe just in general. All right. I'm just doing a vibe overall. She gets an 8.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I think that Monica, I'm going to also give her an, I'm not going to give her an 8 because I gave Lisa an 8. I'm going to give her a 7. I do think that she was doing a lot. I think she's doing a good job of trying to change her like position socially, and she's like in makeup mode. How much of that is like, you know, foresight and like being genuine, and how much of that is like because her back's up against the wall, and you know, how much that ratio even matters at all is up for debate. But yeah, 7 for me. Ryan.
I'm going to say 8 as well. Decent amount all of action, right, and a good apology.
So Whitney, Ryan, what was your score for Whitney?
I think, I'll give Whitney an 8 as well. Had a blend of, you know, some real human stuff happening, plus still some party fireworks under bad circumstances.
Sandy, what do you think about Whitney?
Yeah, I'm going to run her an 8 because she brought it to the party. And I liked that she made it all about her. Not unreasonably, but it worked well.
Yeah, I'll give Whitney an 8 as well. That makes me feel like I should bump Lisa up a bit higher. But I said it, so it's in the spreadsheet that I'm keeping. Can't change it now. So Meredith, what do you think about Meredith, Sandy?
Okay, well, yeah, Meredith can have a 3. I don't know. She just put out her jewelry like every other housewife does. We literally had one like 2 episodes ago that put out a jewelry line. Not that I'm not interested in that. Yeah. To be fair, Ryan, I love seeing their like weird little businesses, but
They all have a jewelry line.
yeah, Meredith. I used to think Meredith was like pretty interesting, maybe like the first season, but she just kind of stagnated a bit in the last while. She's sort of always kind of doing the same thing. She does some drama, but yeah.
Yeah, what I think is makes Meredith a great housewife, because I think that she is a great housewife, is the fact that she is so like emotional and like reactive to any situation. There's a part during this party where, you know, when Lisa comes and, or sorry, when Whitney comes in and is like, tells her what's up and like why she's got like a cloud hanging over her. Meredith is like, just compartmentalize. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. And this is advice like coming from someone who cannot compartmentalize anything and is just so like emotionally affected by everything that is going on. She like flips out on people and then is like, sorry, it's just because I've got this other thing going on in my life. There's some like talk of like some sort of like sick kid that is in her life that is causing her to fly off the handle at people. So this advice to compartmentalize coming from her is just so rich. But that's something that makes her a great housewife. And, you know, that kind of speaks to her lack of awareness here. But yeah, we didn't see much of her other than her jewelry line. But we did get that one little clip that I'm going to give her a point for the compartmentalized lack of self-awareness and for having the maybe most terrible name for a jewelry line out of any housewife jewelry line, which like plated is so cheap. So she's getting a 5 for me. Ryan, did I get your score on Meredith?
No, I'll give a 5. I mean, like, you know, yeah, not much action really besides the event, but I was pretty on the rails.
Yeah, for sure. Angie, Ryan, what did you think about Angie?
I guess 1. Who's Angie?
Yeah. Yeah, we did not see a lot of Angie this episode. So that is a fair assessment.
Yeah, straight up, I don't know. So, I probably know if we went back or whatever, but yeah, no, the name does ring a bell from everyone I saw.
Sandy, what did you think of Angie?
Yeah, I don't have any memory of her in this episode at this point, so I'll give her a 2. I don't know.
2? Yeah, I think like the only time that we saw her was at the very beginning. We got a like her and Heather talking about the Pioneer Party or something like that. I'm going to give her a 2 because she still is the like the catalyst for some of the shit that's going down between Meredith and Lisa. So gets a point for that. Cool. And do you guys feel strongly enough about Mary, friend of, to give her a rating this episode?
I like the carrot cake. It did look pretty good.
So the cake, all right.
I'm going to give the cake a 6.
Okay. She gets a 6 by way of the cake that she did not bake. Sandy?
Yeah, she can have a 3. I mean, I love Mary, but as I said, she's not doing much right now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to give her a 2. All right. So that is Salt Lake City wrapped up for us this week. Let's talk about Miami. Once again, we're going to do Housewives in a Hurry. Ryan, 20 seconds. Tell us who the housewives are and what happened in this episode.
Okay. So I forget who it was, but someone blabbed about Adriana's cancer a whole bunch, which then Adriana went into a K-hole. And then there was an F cancer party. And then old Gertie was mad at Larsa. Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah, Larsa, right? Was blabbing.
Yeah, Larsa was blabbing about Gertie's cancer. And Adriana goes into a K-hole. That, like, pretty much sums up the episode, I would say.
Yeah, it was Gertie's cancer.
Ryan, what highlights did you have from this episode?
K-hole, definitely. Seemed to be a big old commercial for ketamine. Except for the second half, which... I wasn't aware that ketamine therapy could yield, you know, kind of whatever broke her open there, her bro and dad. And I also, you know, because it probably goes through a pretty severe edit, I wonder, like, I don't know how long a K-hole lasts or whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. This scene was amazing. I love that. So Real Housewives of Miami airs directly after Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And this week on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, which we'll talk about in a bit, they start this, like, they have this THC edible dinner and everyone is having like between 0 and like 3 micrograms of THC, like a relatively small amount of THC in their food. And Adriana's right. like, that's cute. I'm going to go into a K-hole. I'm going to go take some ketamine.
Yeah.
Well. Just an amazing contrast. But yeah, the fact that this seemed like it happened in another one of those strip malls that they seem to love on these shows, like the strip mall pseudo medical clinics where you just like go in and it's like, yeah, you we'll give you doctor. Some. Yeah, we'll give you some ketamine.
The doctor and her hugged. I'm like, all right, it's nothing wrong with it. You know, compassionate care, but it's always a choice.
Yeah. I mean, a very emotional scene from Adriana, and it almost felt like sometimes we see in any form of like narrative, a scene where someone experiences like a rebirth and it's like a new starting point for that character. And this really like felt like that. It had the like illusion of having some sort of like breakthrough moment. And I mean, not to say that Adriana as a person had a breakthrough or this is going to like change her as a whole on a person outside of the show, but it seems like in the narrative of this season that that's what this episode is or this scene is representing. So I'm very curious as to see what happens with her going forward this season. Like, I feel like this is going to signify a change in her as a character. I'm hoping that this is like a villain origin story, but either way, the way that this is like framed and presented, it did feel like it was a significant moment. And love that it was from her tripping on ketamine. Just brilliant. Yeah. Yeah, what other highlights did you have?
Well, I think the K-hole definitely stuck out. I think that, yeah, just the plot line about Gertie's cancer in general. I like the over-announcing by Larsa, and then I believe towards the end there was some like weird speculation as to whether or not it was like legit or something.
Yeah. And
that's crazy, because I think, I mean, that's pretty bold. You know, the old cancer fake.
Which has precedent in this world.
I
hate to say that
I didn't know people who've tried. Yeah. No, I legit would hate to say I didn't feel like I knew people who have actually done it. There's one guy I know who got busted doing it. It's kind of insane. But
yeah.
That would be huge. That'd be huge for the season. Just
well, someone got busted on it doing it on Real Housewives of Orange County a few episodes.
Man, and or everyone's a few seasons selling ago. Jewelry. Like what?
It was amazing. It was like that's one of the best seasons of Real Housewives for me, because we got Megan King Edmonds come on, and it was her rookie season, and she got presented as like the world's greatest detective who flushed out Vicky Gunvalson, an all-time great housewife, her partner at the time, Brooks, faking cancer. And it was, yeah, brilliant. That is like the season I feel like got me hooked on Housewives.
That's substantial. Yeah, someone sleuthing someone's husband, wife.
And he was just like such a fantastic villain too, because he just like exuded this energy that was like ick. It was like a real slimy, snaky guy that like, but he was also like, he was charismatic in a way that like those types of people can be. And
yeah,
like that's something that, you know, whether it like compels you to like a person or hate a person, that's still like a type of charisma that you on shows like these, you have to acknowledge as being great for television. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, those compulsive liars, like there, you won't hear of many compulsive liars that aren't charismatic, because that doesn't work. You know, you get into your test phase and you're like, oh, I'm unlikable. This is a failure to launch. But if you're slick and you can lie, then it becomes part of your personality, and it you know, breeds over years. It's insane. Growing up around compulsive liar or two, you know, we all know one.
Yeah.
So totally weird.
So strange. Yeah. But that is to say, like, Gertie is definitely not baking this. Like, she has no motivation to do that. And like, it's clearly something that is like affecting her a ton. And that's also just like not her personality type. And there's like no basis for this.
No,
so
because the fact if you wanted to leverage it, then you share it around. But it wasn't Gertie sharing it around. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
she's just trying to. Yeah.
Sandy, what were your highlights from Miami?
My main highlight was just that I'm loving Larsa as this villain, as we're discussing. So not only did mm-hmm. she tell this cancer secret that she was specifically asked not to share, when Gertie told her about cancer, she also had like the weirdest reaction. And she was like, well, how do you know? So she seems to have some sort of conception about cancer diagnosis that like it's not a thing, because she was like, how could you possibly know you have cancer? And then even in this episode, she said, who tests for cancer? I'm like, a lot of people test for cancer in various ways. That's a major, major thing. So she's having some troubles with the medical system and just how it works, and calling around, like throwing out this fake thing. Like, I'm super impressed and super excited. I've never liked Larsa that much. Like, she's not likable, but I'm liking this villain angle. And was she like this in the past? I feel like she was more just like kind of rude, but not particularly a villain, right?
Yeah, I don't think she was like had this level of villainy. And like you said, her kind of speculating about this being fake, it kind of speaks to her as being someone that would like consider faking cancer in order to get attention. Like, it really seems like she's like, oh, this is something that I would pull.
Better investigate. Yeah. I love it because she's also not that, like, she doesn't seem too smart or like, I don't know, like too strategic. So it's kind of like a little bumbling, but like she's committing to it. So I don't know if you agree, Craig. I'm interested in your take on her, but I'm interested to see where it goes.
I wonder if she saw that season you guys are detailing, right? Yeah. And it was like, well, that's what's going on here.
Yeah, it could be. I think like Larsa is definitely not someone that is particularly strategic, at least in the sense that we see it with other housewives. Like, she's not, I don't think she's strategic in terms of how she plays the game on the show, like in terms of trying to do things in order to craft her narrative and like you know, try to steer herself into certain archetypes that we get to see on screen. But I do think that she is strategic in other ways, especially like socially, just in terms of her overall position. I don't think she sees things in the like from a storytelling perspective, but I do think she is constantly trying to be a social climber. Like, we saw that with like Ramona is someone who is similar to Larsa in that way, where, you know, very aware of, I called Ramona aware. She's not aware of anything, but she like just very concerned about how she is going to like gain more prominence. Like, this relationship, between Larsa and Marcus Jordan feels so fake to me, or it doesn't necessarily feel fake. I feel like they've done a pretty good job of seeming like there's some substance there, but it just like, my gut says that this is bullshit. This is like just for the camera so that people will talk about it. Like, that she is using the fact that she was married to Scottie Pippen and is now dating Michael Jordan's son as like something to get headlines. Talking about her.
I was going to ask about Pippen and so that's Michael Jordan's son.
Yeah.
Wow. That's infinitely interesting in its own regard. But yeah, the podcast thing, isn't it funny watching a fledgling podcast knowing that Only one in five of these things is going to see episode 8. You know what I mean? You guys have the grace of Craig J. Ward, experienced media producer of all types. He's done everything, folks.
Well, I mean, it's not like we're exactly the most successful podcast in the world here, but we do it for the love, for the discussion. it's a labor of love. But yeah, this podcast between Larsa and Marcus, like, no one is asking for this, I don't think. People will listen to it, but like, no one wants that. Even the iHeart Radio girl during that scene was like rolling her eyes at everything they did, and like
separation, like, anxiety. You're like, oh, like, let's just open iTunes and type in separation anxiety and watch the wave crash in of that title.
Yeah, this girl was like doom scrolling while this, like, while they were doing their promo shoot. It was so funny to see how disinterested she was.
Nothing like shooting video about your upcoming podcast, hey? Just kicking that peanut around a little bit before she goes to lunch.
Totally. Sandy, what other highlights did you have from Miami?
You know, that was pretty much it. I'm going to be honest, I watched it really late last night, and I was trying to do it. But I did also just, the podcast. It's cringy, and I want it to be real because I love when people are, like, embarrassingly in love, but I agree that it's hard to believe. But it's still embarrassing, so I appreciate it still. Either way, it's embarrassing, so I love it. So just Larsa, overall, she's going to get a high rating for me if we rate them.
Oh, great. Yeah, I think we covered a lot of what I wanted to talk about as well. I do want to talk about the scene that we got off the top with Marisol and Kiki, and how they're also like banged up from this like charity basketball event that we got last episode.
I feel like Kiki chose a nighty or whatever that was to look extra frail or something, like, because like people are so clued into fashion. That thing was like definitely an 80-year-old, like, I have a walker, I'm at home look.
Yeah, right. It was like, speaking of Michael Jordan, they were like, this scene reminded me of like the Toon Squad at halftime in Space Jam, where, you know, you got like characters in like an iron lung and everyone is just like cartoonishly deflated and banged up. It was really great to see Marisol, like, who self-diagnosed herself into like wearing a sling that she put like Chanel pins on or something in order to bling up. Really, really fantastic. I loved that. You know, I love that Kiki was like trying to like sell this injury as legitimate, being like, oh, maybe I gave Adriana a hard time last year about how she was reacting, because we got that flashback to Adriana in her wheelchair. Just like that was a winner of a scene for me. And you know, no housewives involved, just friends of, so it was awesome that we got to see that. And you know, Marisol had a like a bit where she was writing the word like flatulent on a whiteboard to like differentiate between flatulent and fraudulent. Fantastic all around. The other thing that stood out to me was the scene leading up to Adriana's K-hole, where Julia is like got phone calls to make to invite people to this party and decides to call Marisol of all people while Adriana is in the car, like to invite her to this party in front of Adriana, where that is like such a fraught relationship. And you know, Marisol is like seems very willing to come to this party until Julia's like, oh, by the way, it's at Adriana's place. And she's like, oh yeah, I've got a medical procedure tomorrow, so I can't, but you know, I'll be there in spirit. And Adriana is like so pissed about this. Like, she's like, it is totally because of me. And absolutely, it is because of her. And yeah, I thought that was just an amazing exchange.
And not only is it because of her, but Adriana, as of last episode, was barring Marisol and maybe someone else from her house. So I love how she's now like, oh, she won't come to my house. Like, I don't even know how Julia got her to agree to this. Cause last, after that basketball game, she was like, this person's not coming to my house and all that. So that's, but we have amazing friends of in this series. And I honestly think some of them maybe should be swapped. Like maybe all of them, like obviously Adriana and Marisol have been full housewives in the past and they bring like more than like Lisa. I don't know, you know, like this will shake out in our ratings perhaps, but I think they're really good. And Kiki's so cute. Like she kind of, she's just a nice comic relief. So yeah.
Yeah, totally. Well, let's get into rating these housewives. I want to start with Gertie. Ryan, what did you think about Gertie?
Gertie? I like Gertie. Just like, yeah. So I'd say 8. Like, she's definitely could have flipped out more or whatever or made more of a thing about it. But she was kind of like medium raging. So you could tell it was pretty real. And I would say that's warranted.
Yeah, totally. Sandy?
Yeah, I'll give Gertie a 7. She's always solid. I like her. And she's got a good storyline. Not a good storyline. Let's rephrase that, but a storyline that's bringing a lot.
A compelling one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also give her a 7. I feel like, you know, she did give us an entertaining episode, but I feel like she left a little bit on the table. Like she could have really exploded at this fuck cancer party at the, you know, the audacity of Larsa to be like accusing someone of faking cancer. Like it was not the place to do it, but also it was exactly the place to do it. So, you know, that's where I feel like she could have scored a little bit higher marks. But I don't know, does this party end? Like, is it to be continued?
So yeah, because we have to have the opera singing.
Bit of that. Oh, yeah, of course. How could I forget that? Mm-hmm. Speaking of opera, Sandy, what did you think of Julia?
Man, Julia's okay. I'll give her a 5. I don't know. That's all.
Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I'll say... I'll give her a 6 just because I don't know how you could have handled that phone call in the car, you know, or she just seems like she's got a little bit of awkward in her all the time. Julia does. But I'll give her, she would be a 5, but I'll give her the extra point because I'm just realizing all the sports relationships in Miami that are happening now that you mentioned Pippen and Jordan. And I know that Julia is married to Martina Navratilova. So that's a pretty cool connection right there. So. I don't know. She gets a bonus point from.
I think I like a 6 for Julia as well because, the scene in the car was a standout for me. The fact that, you know, she just unwaveringly went with Adriana to support her during her K-hole. We're gearing up for the opera, which is, you know, what her tagline this season is all about. So, still it wasn't exactly fireworks. So 6. Sandy, what do you think about Lisa?
Lisa is a 2. I'm not that into her. Just don't feel like she's giving is her new relationship and it's kind of whatever. Right? Nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah. There was the only other thing was like, she isn't showing up to this party because the police are at her. They showed up to her door or something like that.
Well, maybe next episode she'll get more then.
Yeah, I think a 2's fair. That's where I'm going with that as well. Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know. I'll bump it up to a 4 on my end just because of the inherent intrigue I have at the cringe value of the podcast where I'm just like,
that's Larsa. Oh, this is Larsa. Lisa we're talking about.
Sorry, I misheard.
Yeah.
Okay, and now I have to separate the two in my mind because I thought it was Lisa, but Larsa is Larsa Pippen, right? And it's Lisa. Yeah. So wait, what was Lisa doing?
So we didn't see much of her. She was on the boat, for the F1 party or whatever. She showed up her husband. But that's about it. Then there's a little bit of talk at the end of the episode about whether or not she's going to show up to this party, and they phone her, and she is not, because the police just showed up.
Oh, okay. Then 10, unbelievable potential. We haven't seen it blossom at all. So I'm going to say, you know, this is the part where the firework disappears in the night sky right before its colors light up the horizon.
Wow. Poetic. Okay, so let's talk Larsa. Do you want to stick with your four on Larsa?
No, now that bundling the cancer thing into the podcast thing, now we have a right. full. Yeah, I'm going to give my first legit 10, I think.
To Larsa. Okay.
Cringe of podcast. We saw Lisa in Salt Lake City handle a friend's death with Noah Plum. I don't ever know how to say that. And then we get the contrast of going even worse with it, blabbing someone's very intimate news and then questioning the veracity of the news that you blabbed, which is a mind-blowing turn. Yeah, so all over the map. And also, your name makes me want delicious laksa, which is Southeast Asian deliciousness. Mm-hmm. Really good noodles and stuff. Yeah so 10.
I'm gonna give Larsa I'm gonna give her a 9 here. It's a little bit of a reluctant 9 because I gave Lisa Barlow a 9 for her. Oh no, I gave Lisa Barlow an 8. Okay, I'm not gonna rate Larsa higher than Lisa Barlow on this. I'm sorry. Yeah, an 8 feels right. I feel like she gave us on par with what Lisa Barlow gave us on the Salt Lake City episode that we discussed. And yeah, that's where I'm at. How about you, Sandy?
I'm going to do a 10, which is, I think, what I gave Lisa Barlow. And I was very impressed with both.
Yeah. Awesome. Dr. Nicole, Ryan, what do you think?
I don't know. I might've missed some of the scenes with Nicole as well. Miami has a couple more cast members in Salt Lake City.
We also didn't get very much of her. I think we got just like a single scene where Nicole and Anthony are making pasta or something with Alexia and Todd.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a cooking lesson scene.
The thing about the apology thing there?
Yeah.
Okay. I remember that scene then. Yeah.
But don't forget, we also saw her looking at her new walk-in closet at her future house. So exciting.
Oh, right. Yeah. Ryan, what was your number for Nicole?
I had 2, I guess. Not really. Yeah.
Sandy?
2.
2's across the board. It would be a 1 for me if it weren't for the fact that she's just like likable. I think that she's just kind of a likable person. So I'm reluctant to give her a 1. Alexia, I feel like Alexia is always like such a high octane housewife, but we didn't really get too much of her. I'm putting her at a 4, which is probably lower than I would rank her on almost any other episode that we've seen her on. Sandy, what do you think about Alexia?
Yeah, similar to you, but I'll give her a 5, but she's always fun. She gives color. So
yeah. Ryan?
Yeah, I remember Alexia from episodes I'd watched previously for the show. And yeah, like you guys say, I remember way more fireworks. So yes, just not an episode with her heavy in the mix. So I'll give it a 3.
All right. Okay. So we've got 3 friends on Miami. Let's give them ratings because I feel like we saw more of them than we did like some full-fledged housewives this episode. So we'll start with Marisol. Sandy, what did you think of Marisol?
Marisol can have a 7. She was like, as you said, that scene was great. I always like to keep up with her alcoholism, and she's fun and cute and et cetera. So.
Ryan?
Yeah, I'll say a 7 as well. Yeah, she's didn't have much to do, but did fine with it. And yeah, that's obviously they were given the opener for a reason. It's funny that they're taking the lead.
Yeah, I am going to give her an 8 as well, just because like I love Marisol. I feel like any opportunity that she has for screen time, she makes the absolute most of it. She not only like can be this like very cartoonish housewife, like she seems almost like a caricature of a housewife. We got that in this scene, but also, you know, I feel like a lot of people who play up a more hammy type performance on these shows, they don't have the same amount of like tension, because that kind of diffuses the tension between them and other relationships that they have, because it's so like performative almost. But Marisol is like constantly has a very like tense relationship with a lot of people. So I think that she can affect scenes even when she is like not there. Like the ghost of Marisol is in the car with Julia and Adrian. Well, actually she was kind of in that scene since they were on the call, but like she impacts all of these relationships when she's not even there. So I feel like her presence is a big one, and I loved the scene at the beginning. So she gets an 8 for me. Let's talk about Adriana. Sandy, what do you think about her?
Yeah, I'll give her an 8 because the ketamine thing was awesome, and I really like her overall. She brings a lot of drama, insane, in absurdity.
Yeah, totally. Ryan?
I think that I'll give it a 9 just based on, you know, that was pretty intense watching her on ketamine. that was interesting. So, yeah, I'm going to give it a 9.
Yeah, I'm going to give her a 10. She went into a K-hole for us. So yeah. That is giving. But also she just has such an enormous impact on the show as a whole. Like I feel like specifically with Marisol and Adriana, if they weren't there, this would be a completely different show. Like they give more to this show than Nicole does, I think, like, or like even Julia does. Yeah. I think that, you know, Miami just wouldn't be Miami without them. And the fact that they aren't mojito holders, I think is what they hold in Miami, is baffling to me. I don't really get it. But yeah, 10 for Adriana. Also, she's enabling Julia's delusions of being able to sing opera. Like this is, this is like brilliant work from her. So looking forward to see what the rebirth of Adriana is like.
So wait, Julia is going to be singing La Traviata or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, it is going to be terrible if all the like clips that we have got so far are any indication of her abilities.
I didn't understand that was the through line. I thought they might have done just like a fun let's all give it a shot kind of thing, and that was just a highlight.
We haven't really got any sort of idea about her like motivation on why opera specifically.
Yeah, either. Like if you can't nail she'll be coming around the mountain, don't go for the marriage of Figaro, you know what I mean? Like totally. Maybe it's the quasi-European thing, you know, it's a natural bridge to opera just being European, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, we also have Kiki. I know that Ryan, you've got a hard stop here right away, so we'll let you go right after that. Do you want to give your rating on Kiki?
Yeah, I'm gonna give her a 7. The walker drama going on. Not drama, I guess self-imposed drama.
Yeah. Sandy?
Yeah, I'm gonna give her a 7 too. Kiki's fun, as I said, and she's all like, she tries really hard to be a full housewife. Like you can kind of always tell she's working for that, and it's very endearing, and the walker was absolutely part of that.
Yeah, she is a definite grinder. I am going to give her a 6 still. I gave Gertie a 7, which in retrospect is a little low, but I feel like 6 is about right for where Kiki is. Gertie gave us a lot more drama, so I don't know why it feels like a 6. I don't know. I can't put Kiki and Gertie in the same class because we really didn't get a lot of Kiki, but what she did give was pretty great. Julia's a 6, so Kiki seems about right with a 6 for me. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Ryan. I know you've got to get going. We're going to cover Real Housewives of Beverly Hills in a minute, but while we've got you, want to let everyone know where they can find you?
No. I do stand-up comedy, but I'm not very inclined to have people visiting me online and whatnot. I just don't have the time for that junk.
Yeah.
So don't look me up. Don't come to my shows. If it happens, it happens. You know, if you're in a room and I'm in a room and I'm entertaining, then that's that.
Is there anything else you want to plug that's not related to you? You want to give something else a shout out?
Yeah. Duolingo.
Duolingo.
Yeah. Actually, their app development team does a great job. They're constantly updating. Really great UX. My hat's off to the team.
There you go. Go and learn Klingon. Duolingo. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun, thanks, as always.
So, Sandy, Beverly Hills, what were your highlights from Beverly Hills?
I really liked the back and forth sniping between Dorit and Sutton. So it was kind of like across the episode. And at first, it started off with a very kind of catty chat between Kyle and Dorit and Crystal was like trying to tone it down and not partaking in that, but Dorit just kind of pulls out like, well, Sutton's pretty weird, as they were discussing with the interaction with Kyle, which I admit was pretty weird, and that's why we love our Sutton.
Yeah.
But then she's just like, she just seems like someone that's probably drinking vodka in the morning with her coffee, and I'm like, okay, like, I don't know, that just came out of nowhere, and I'm very defensive about Sutton, and like, I just felt, and then they were just kind of making fun of her, and then Crystal came to her defense, at least in her talking head, if not in the actual conversation. But then Sutton gets something in later, which is regarding the scene with her matchmaker, and she's brought Dorit over to help her with that, and she says, if Dorit fell in love with PK, maybe I need to not be so picky. And I was like, good, you got your point in. But then later, Dorit, and again, honestly, I don't even remember the context of this, but I just wrote down that she accused Sutton of not being self-aware. Maybe it was within the dating discussion. And I mean, there's different levels of self-awareness for all these ladies. I don't know if I would peg Dorit as like the most self-aware housewife. So I thought that was a little hypocritical. Yeah. And that's just like a real, like, that's a kind of a cutting insult too, right? It's sort of like a personality insult. So anyway, I'm very defensive of Sutton, and I didn't love Dorit insulting her, but I did love Sutton insulting Dorit.
Yeah. So first that scene at Kyle's or Dorit's, I can't remember whose place it was at with Crystal. I thought that was like a clear setup from Kyle and Dorit, and Crystal didn't realize that she was walking into this scene where the full purpose of this was to get it on camera in front of someone else talking shit about Sutton and like putting it out there that she struggles with like alcohol, maybe, like just put that speculation out there. And I think Crystal is like, she's smart, maybe she doesn't have the most like smarts in terms of how to play the housewife game, but she's like a smart person, and I feel like she got the read on that situation, and like you said, she was trying to tone it down, especially in her confessional surrounding it. But I feel like she also did that in the moment, which I was excited to see. I have really been liking Crystal this season. So to see her be like kind of temper down that conversation and make sure that she was not like going in on that, because for two housewives like Dorit and Kyle, who are a lot more experienced than Crystal. I mean, this is Crystal's third season now, but still, like, Kyle and Dorit have more under their belt and they like they play the game way more. It felt to me like it was a trap, and it wasn't just to like set up Sutton in a certain position. It was to force Crystal to be on their side so that, you know, so that they would have this like leverage over her, where it's like, well, you were being catty too. You were talking shit about Sutton too. Like, you need to like go along with our crew. You need to roll with us, because otherwise, you know, you're not going to have Sutton to fall back on because you were, you know, laughing about this and playing along too. But Crystal didn't play ball with them, so they don't have that. And, you know, like everything in this game is a calculated risk that you have to take. So they had to put this out there. They needed to like expose their cards in order to potentially like hook her in there. And it didn't work. So Crystal now has this information that, you know, they are talking shit about Sutton, and she can use that however she wants. And, you know, they can't say like, well, you were joking about it too, because she wasn't. So, I thought that this was a very like nuanced scene. And I've said like on the past episode so far, I'm just like really appreciating what is happening on Beverly Hills right now, because I think we're getting like a lot of interesting things, both, you know, from a storytelling perspective, from like a game perspective. I loved seeing this, like, you know, this classic housewife trap of like bringing some unsuspecting housewife in to like be catty with in order to try to deteriorate at a relationship that they've got, both like directly by like talking shit about it to them, but also indirectly by like creating leverage of being in this situation where like, hey, you were talking shit about this too, so you're like, you don't have the higher ground here. So love that scene.
Yeah, that was awesome. Another thing that I was really interested in, obviously the weed dinner was interesting in a few levels. Obviously the I want to talk about the Sutton Kyle stuff, but one little thing to note, like, I was interested that Kyle jokingly brought up the dinner party from hell, that famous thing that they flash back to, I think, from when Alison Dubois, the psychic, was at that dinner years ago. And Kyle was like jokingly bringing up what Alison said, which is a little weird because like Alison was dead on. Like, she said, your husband will never emotionally fulfill you. I mean, I can't say the details of their breakup, but they're breaking up now. And I'm sure at this point, Kyle knows enough that there's something that, you know, she's having troubles in her marriage. So I was interested that she sort of frivolously brought that up when it really is actually feels like quite a, I don't know, weighty thing to bring up, that this psychic actually predicted this 10 years ago. So obviously you could say anyone might have a divorce in 10 years. So, but I just thought it was interesting that she brought it up as a joke.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think like, I feel like Kyle was like putting that out there because she wanted her marriage to be a topic of conversation for some reason. And I think that that motivation would be different depending on, you know, who was going to like take the bait. And I feel like she knew that it was going to be Sutton that was going to like jump on that because of what Sutton has been saying. But I'm curious what you think about like how Sutton and Kyle converse, like how they address each other.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I'm like fully formed, but it's like they're both reading each other, but they're also they're adversarial, but I don't know. I just like Sutton's right. There's something going on. Kyle maybe doesn't want to talk about it or secretly does or whatever, but Sutton won't let it go. I don't know. It's certainly compelling, and they certainly seem to not be finding a peaceful middle ground, which we love. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? I'm interested to hear yours.
Yeah, this is probably the most interesting thing about Kyle for me this season. It's not so much her relationship with Morgan or Mo, but it is how she is, like, I don't know, both Sutton and Kyle are projecting onto each other. And mm-hmm. I think that, like, Crystal had a really good assessment. I think it was Crystal maybe it was Anne-Marie. Someone was like, you both are talking like at each other. You're not mm-hmm. saying anything. I think that that's exactly the read. They're both kind of repeating the same things. They're like repeating these ideas that they have about each other, but they're not like saying anything. They're not mm-hmm. communicating what they want of the other. And it's more about them, just like emoting at each other without mm-hmm. making any ground. So I thought that was, it's interesting how they talk, and I don't see how they are going to progress without having some like tangible, concrete thing to actually argue over. Like, it feels like the type of conversation that needs a winner. Like, you know how sometimes you can be like, if you're arguing with someone, like whether it's like online in the conversation, in a conversation or something like that, and it just feels like someone is not going to let it go unless they win. That's what it feels mm-hmm. like. It feels like someone needs to feel like a winner, and they both need that. And there's no way that can happen, because I don't think they even know what they want from each other.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much we care about like the pretense of their real legitimate friendship. They keep talking about how like this conversation is worth continuing because I care about Sutton as a friend and vice versa. But like, I don't think you guys actually like each other very much. Maybe like I get it. And does that matter? I mean, how many of these people actually like each other? It depends on the show, right? But they definitely talk about this friendship being worth saving. So I have to keep yelling, yeah, my views at this person and then back talking them. So kind of typical, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Yeah. And I was actually under the impression, like going into this season, that Sutton and Kyle had like a real world foundation for their friendship. I don't know if Kyle was the one that brought Sutton on, but I mm-hmm. seem to remember, didn't Sutton live in like Kyle's guest house the divorce or something? So mm-hmm. I thought that there was some sort of real world foundation there, but it definitely, maybe that's why this is such like a messy dialogue between them, is because there's history that complicates this, and it's more like, you know, a frustration with each other that isn't tangible. But Kyle is fighting so dirty, in my opinion. The fact that she's like, oh, you know, I think she might have an alcohol problem, or like, she also implied that Sutton has like an eating disorder, and like, real like digs, like really emotional digs that mm-hmm. are happening here. So this feels really like an honest emotional dynamic between the two that we're getting on screen, which is a real contrast to me between the dynamic that we see with Kyle and Mauricio, where I feel like they aren't, like, they're trying really hard to put up a bit of a front that it's not working. Like, we see their relationship in a deteriorated state, even though it seems like they're trying to maintain this idea that things are, you know, maybe not great, but still okay. And they're using like this idea of Kyle getting tattoos as like an allegory for their relationship, like her mm-hmm. putting marks on her body, like chipping away at the person that she was for all those years with Mauricio. I think that is like fascinating in its own way, and it's interesting to see it play out as kind of a contrast between the relationship that she's got with Sutton.
That's a good point. And side note, him calling her Love Bean is like gag. Love Bean. And I've never heard him call her that before. I have never noticed. But he's pulled out Love Bean like he just says it every sentence in this season. I was like, oh. Really trying to spice up the romance. Not working. I don't know. Desperate attempt. I don't know.
Did you have any other highlights from Beverly Hills?
I think that was mostly it. I just thought it was interesting how Garcelle jumped in to kind of up the firepower on Sutton's attack of Kyle, which was kind of not going anywhere because she just kept saying, is there something you want to share? And then Garcelle was like, about your marriage. Like, and just kind of like pushed the rock over the cliff there. So I just thought that was kind of good because Garcelle's a character that like I like her. But I kind of am on the fence on how like good of a housewife she is, I guess. We probably talked about this in the past, but she has her moments where she just kind of bluntly pushes things forward, and that's useful. So,
yeah, like generally kind of like a passive force on the show, just like she's there and, you know, has kind of peripheral drama. Like, you know, I guess last season with Erica, like Erica had such a dominant storyline, and you know, Garcelle did have some drama with her relating to her family, and but it's always kind of like sidelines, and we don't see her actively engaging in situations like this typically. So it was really good to see Garcelle kind of jump in. I also like Crystal's another person that I feel like never really takes a front row seat. And I think that I'm really loving what she's bringing this season. We even got her like a very rare moment of Crystal stirring the pot at this dinner where she's like, before we eat, does anyone want to clear the air about anything? Like, you know, clearly knowing that she's just brought Sutton and Kyle in from having a tense relation or tense conversation. And it's like, yeah, does anyone have anything they want to talk about in front of the group?
Nice.
Really, really love that.
Before none of us get high.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everyone was taking, I think the highest dosage was like 5 mil or micrograms or something like that.
Did Kyle end up having any? Because remember she was like afraid about being hypocritical, but she's also hosting a weed dinner. Do we know what she had?
Right. I think she didn't, but I'm not sure.
Why have a weed dinner? It doesn't seem like the crowd that wants to have a weed dinner.
Yeah, clearly it was not. I think we covered most of my highlights. I think we have to talk about the supporting cast at this dinner was really strong. The fact that we got Denise Richards coming back, Faye Resnick, Camille Grammer, like this was an all-star dinner that happened. And Denise, she gives off like vibes. I'm gonna like play Kyle here a little bit, but like she gives off vibes that she is on something. Like she does not seem like she's completely lucid.
Yeah. I did feel like all the clips of her crazy face were like overblown in the sort of previews I saw on Instagram. Once I saw it for real, you know, I was like, okay, it was just one moment. But yeah, she feels a little something. So, yeah,
it's even like not so much the faces. And I did get this impression when she was like a full time cast member. It's like just like very like cracky vibes to how she like she talks and she like, I don't know, it's something about it is just like really off. I don't think we'll ever know, at least on Housewives, because I don't see her coming back, but you know, maybe we'll see something play out. the other thing that I want to bring up is like we got the first like substantial appearance of Morgan on this, and I'm curious what your thought about this relationship or potential relationship between Kyle and Morgan looked like.
So after this, I just Googled, because I'm like, where was this all at? Because there's so many rumors. They were dating. They were seen together, whatever. They're not dating in any official way, right? Like Morgan has a boyfriend or partner, some other singer or something. I mean, I don't even know what to say. It was kind of cool to see them together after all the hype. I never heard of Morgan Wade, but I like looked her up, looked at the video that Kyle was in where she plays her love interest. That's fun. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say she has more chemistry with Morgan than Mauricio at this time, as everyone was saying. I would certainly stand by that, but I don't know. Like, at this point, I'm not even up on like, do we think that like Kyle is bisexual and pursuing her? Like, where is it all at? I don't even know. I don't know. Are they just friends?
I don't know what the speculation is online about that, but to me, this did not seem like it was purely platonic. Like, they had, first off, they did have like such a flirty vibe, but she let Morgan let Kyle like tattoo her like with a K. Like, I don't know. That's obviously, Morgan does not have a sentimental perspective on tattoos, which I think like that's very common when you've got lots of tattoos. It's just like, what, like it doesn't matter as much. But also, like, you have to know how that is going to come across when you're doing that on camera, on a show, when you've got all this speculation. It just seems very, like, it seems very direct. And, I don't know. It gave off, like, very, like, lovey-dovey vibes.
But genuine, because I mean, Kyle's a person that I wouldn't put it past her to sort of hype up that stuff, right? To get headlines. Not to say it could be genuine. It could be genuine to some degree. I think she leaned into it, obviously, right? But I don't know. I don't have a hard read on that. But it's cool to see her with someone else. Like I like Kyle's trajectory. I like her like transformation. Sounds like we're going to hear a whole bunch more about her friend who committed suicide and how that's been affecting her. And I saw some comment where she said that everyone knew about that, but it hasn't been on camera yet. So that's some editing choices happening there for story. So anyway, I just think it's all very interesting. And I'd be interested to see if Morgan stays as a character. She said that like she stalked Morgan online. And that's how they became friends. So that shows a dynamic. You don't do that every day to just a random friend. That shows like a level of interest that might be more than just friends. So I don't know. It's fun, I guess. I'm interested in it.
Yeah, totally. Let's briefly talk about Anne-Marie, who was going into the season supposed to be a full-time housewife. And now there's speculation that she is not going to be because her husband is facing sexual assault allegations. But we got the first appearance of her at this dinner. Crystal has like a confessional where she says that bitch is nosy, which I thought was really, really funny. What did you think about Anne-Marie at this dinner?
Honestly, I don't recall anything super standing out. She made, as you said, she did that read on Kyle and Sutton, which I think was accurate and helpful, but I don't really have any strong opinions on that, to be honest. Do you?
Yeah, I think aside from that, she was pretty like transparent. She didn't really give much, but I'm curious to see what her, you know, how she evolves this season and whether she is going to get her diamond or not. Let's quickly go through the housewives and give them a score. Sandy, what do you think about Garcelle?
I give Garcelle a 5 because she made that comment at the dinner and pushed it forward.
Yeah, I'm going to give her a 5 as well. I think that that's fair. We didn't see much of her outside of that, but that's that was good. How about Sutton?
I give Sutton a 10. Love Sutton. She's bringing it all the time.
Yeah, I'm going to give Sutton a 9. I think that she has been fantastic so far. leaving a little room for growth there. Erica?
One? I don't remember. Was she even in this episode?
I think we saw her. Well, she was at the dinner for sure, but I don't think we saw any. Oh, we got a scene between her and her like new talent manager, but I think that's about it. Like, we kind of got the implication that her old talent manager leaked something about Kathy.
Yeah. I give her a one for this episode.
Yeah, I'm going to give her a one as well. Dorit?
Dorit can have an 8. I don't like her, but she's being snarky to people. And an 8? Maybe a 7. I'll give her a 7.
Okay, that's in line with what I'm going to do, a 7 as well. I thought that it was really... Yeah, she played a part in Kyle's trap. And also, I thought that, you know, showing up to Sutton's like matchmaking thing with like the worst intentions was really good. So I like that. How about Crystal?
Crystal can have a 5 for not falling in that trap we discussed and the comment at the dinner.
All right. I'm tempted to give Crystal a 7, and I think I'm going to do that. I just really have been seeing some growth from her. So yeah, not falling into the trap and, being a little bit messy at dinner and trying to stir things up. Just really appreciating the trajectory that she's on. Okay, Kyle.
Kyle can have a 9. She's bringing it as well. She's working hard this whole season.
Yeah, I think I am going to give her a 9 as well. I was debating between whether I give her a 10 or not, but on par with Sutton is where I think she should live in my rankings. I was going to say we should rate Anne-Marie. We didn't really see much of her, but yeah, let's just give her a score.
I'll give her a 2.
2? Okay, I'll give her a 2 as well. I do think that that Reed was good, but she's going to have to bring it. Cool. I think that about covers everything that I wanted to talk about for Beverly Hills. Thanks so much for doing this again, Sandy. I think this is going to be our last regular episode of the year. We're going to take a break over the holidays and come back in the new year. Trying to put together a Christmas special at some point, TBD on that, but Sandy, hoping that you can join us for that. I think Dylan said that he was interested in joining for that, and we'll see what we've got for a guest and what works out scheduling wise. So keep an eye out for that. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube. Give us a rating on your favorite podcast platform. That really helps us out. Until the new year, keep on wiping.